Tell you what, Glyn, I'm bloody glad I've got my long johns and hip flask at the moment. By God, it's cold, isn't it?
Yeah, I checked my garden temperature. I'm a bit nerdy about the weather, and I've got a thermometer in the garden. And the other night, it went down to -7, which was very cold.
Well, my walking buddy Stu and I, actually, I told Stu that I'm going to mention him in every episode, and that every time I do, he's got to pay me £5. And he thinks I'm joking, but we did a walk yesterday. It's 13.5, 14 miles, and I think the feel, the wind chill factor took it down to about -8, -9, and by God, it was cold. But I've got a little riddle for you. We discovered something yesterday. What connects Henry VIII with a little known and very much hidden medieval castle in Wiltshire?
You've got me stumped on that one.
Yeah, and I'm not going to tell you the answer. You're going to have to look at the website or the Facebook page.
Ah, oh, no. So welcome to another Hidden Wiltshire podcast, where we talk about many of the hidden mysteries of Wiltshire. I'm Glyn Coy, and with me I have my trusted sidekick,
Paul Tillett. And we're both photographers, aren't we, Glyn?
Well, allegedly. We do try.
Yeah. Well, we must be, because I've just had a magazine article printed with my photographs in a photography magazine. So that must mean...
Oh, you're just boasting there.
Yeah, but they were all rubbish. But,
but no, don't do yourself down.
My first and last publication, I think. Oh, and I sold some prints, so it's been a good couple of weeks.
Oh, that's good. That makes you a real photographer. Yeah. You sold some prints. If people are prepared to buy what you've done, I mean, that shows that you've
done
something right.
Well, either that or they're mad.
Yeah. Okay. Well, this week we're going to talk about the Deverells. We promised this on the last podcast 2 weeks ago. And actually, when we thought about how we're going to do this, we realized that we're probably going to have to split this into at least two podcasts. So because there's just so much to see and talk about and go through. So this week we're going to focus on really the south side of the Deverells. And in a future podcast, we'll talk about other parts of the Deverells. And actually, there's loads in the surrounding area where we could spread this over multiple podcasts. But anyway, I think this week we're going to start around the village of Kingston Deverell. And before we do that, I mean, this is a favourite area of yours, isn't it, Paul? Do you want to say a few words about why that is?
Well, should we start off with where it is for those that don't know? Because, again, we're still sort of in the southern part of Wiltshire. So for people, well, that bloke that listens from Swindon, he might not know. So Kingston Deverell is in the Wyly Valley. I mean, people around here call it the Deverell Valley, but it's actually the River Wyly that runs along the valley. And it sort of, what we're looking at starts at Longbridge Deverell and Hill Deverell around there, which is south of Warminster on the A350. And then Kingston Deverell is on the B3095, which sort of goes along the Wyly Valley and up over the hill, over White Sheet Hill and down into Mere. So this week we're going to be looking at Kingston Deverell and the area sort of south of the B3095. And it's sort of bounded by the A350 and the A303. It's quite a large area and there's plenty to go at. But to answer your question as to why, I walk here a lot, and it's not too far to go for me. But I think what strikes about it is you don't see that many people walking, especially in the hills around there. And that's what I like doing, is walking in the hills. And it's quite rare that you see other people. And there are parts of the county where... you know, they're beautiful, but they're well trodden. But here, there's you just get this incredible sense of sort of peace and remoteness. And I know we talk a lot about the history, and this isn't meant to be a history podcast, but the landscape and the wildlife up there, which we will touch upon today, is just stunning. So, you know, I'm hoping by sort of publicising it a bit today, we don't spoil it, but it's big enough for us all to share. And I think what makes it less popular is the fact that you know, it takes a bit of energy to walk in these areas. There's some pretty steep climbs up into the hills, particularly on the north side, which we'll cover in another podcast. You know, it's quite exposed, so particularly bad weather, it can be pretty tough going. But that shouldn't put you off, and you can do long walks, you can do short walks, out and back walks, circular walks. There's plenty to see.
Yeah, there is. I mean, I concur with that, because I did a walk, well, this south side walk that we're going to actually use as a framework for what we're discussing today. But I did that walk last year, and I didn't see anyone. I mean, it may be a couple of people in the distance. The paths up there are not very well trodden. There is a lot of peace you can get in solitude up there, and it just is that little bit more off the beaten track for most people. It's not near any, really, in walking distance of any towns, so you have to, unless you live in one of the villages, you've got to make an effort to get there. And it's just not as well known. And maybe we'll change that a little bit on this podcast, but not too much.
Yeah, because if we had both of our listeners up there at the same time, it would be carnage, wouldn't it?
It would be. It wouldn't be too far from the madding crowd then. But it's fantastic. Actually, one thing, just a little anecdote about my trip up there last year. I'd bought this new camera, and it was one of those days. It was late May, and the sunshine was amazing. It was one of those hot days. So I got boiled as I was walking, because, of course, I put a few extra layers on and I had too many layers on. It was boiling. But anyway, I took these fantastic photographs, so I thought. Took them home, fired them up, put them on my PC screen, and there were big blue skies without clouds, which isn't always good for photography. But anyway, it wasn't too bad. But I noticed on each of my skies I had a dark blob. And I thought, what on earth is that? And of course, the camera that I got was one of these new mirrorless ones. And a bit of dust had got inside and went on the sensor. So the whole walk had this speck of dust on the sensor. So it's one of the hazards of having a mirrorless camera.
Well, it's easy to get rid of. Very easy to get rid of in Photoshop or Lightroom or whatever.
I know.
You edit, yeah. I know. In fact, the first thing I normally do is start with cleaning up the sensor spots.
It's fun. There are lots, but it was one of those things. Normally, you don't notice them too much, and they're good enough to just fire up on social media just as a nice pick. But then I thought, oh blimey, I'm going to have to edit each one of these to get, because it was a really noticeable blob. And when I took the lens off and had a look inside, there was this great big speck of dust just.
It's one of the hazards. I mean, years ago, film people didn't bother. You know, you mostly got the dust over the mirror cameras, and you can see it through the viewfinder, but of course you don't see it on the film. But it's, as you say, it's not so much of a problem with social media, but when if you print something, then they stand out like a sore thumb.
I know, you can see them.
If you print big, if you go sort of A2, which I quite often do, I mean, huge sort of spot. Oh my God, how did I miss that? it's painful, but you have to do it. You have to go and clean them up.
Yeah, that's true.
We're both going to talk about King Alfred, aren't we?
We are
today, because there's a massive Alfred connection here. But maybe before we go on to Alfred, we can talk about the sort of wider area just around Kingston, because, well, just to explain, I mean, the walk that Glyn and I sort of, I think, did the same walk. We started in Kingston. Before you sort of even leave the village, when you sort of look around, and if you look on an OS map, you can sort of look west, and that's not a place that either of us walked. But I was looking at the OS map just the other day, and about you look at the number of sort of earthworks and tumuli up there, and there are places like Rodmead Hill, which is, there's a sort of an enclosure and earthwork up there, which is sort of Bronze Age, Iron Age sort of period. You've got Charnage Down up there, Bronze Age earthworks. And I'm just looking at the map now, and it's just dotted with tumuli and earthworks just everywhere up there. Cross Dyke, you know, sort of a ditch and earthworks. I mean, it's just all over the place. And that's before you even leave Kingston Deverell. And the sort of, I suppose, it's a sort of bit of a segue into the Alfred connection. You've also got a sort of junction of ancient trackways and Roman roads. But I don't know where you parked, Glyn, but there's a little telephone box in the middle of Kingston, an old-fashioned red telephone box on the road that sort of heads sort of north-south through the village. And there's a little lay-by there, and it will take, I don't know, two or three cars or whatever. And it's a sort of sign of how few people go and walk up there. I always park there, and I'm always the only car in that lay-by. And even though we're sort of heading south, first of all, I head north from that phone box and just up to the end of the road. And then you sort of turn right at sort of like a T junction. And the main sort of main road, but the little minor road bears round to the left. But there's a lane on the right. And if you head right, you eventually come round to a ford. And that is the King Alfred connection, isn't it?
It is indeed. And actually, that ford has some history in itself. In the modern day, I'm sure it's caught many drivers unawares, because it's not recommended that you drive through that particular ford, because it's not very passable unless you're in a high wheelbase vehicle. I know Land Rover's maybe just about to cut it, but particularly in the winter time, it would. Yeah, in the winter time, I wouldn't bother. But it's dangerous.
Yeah,
but I think the ford itself. Sorry, I was just going to say the ford yeah, itself is, and again, I've looked into this and not been able to find this with true historical certainty. But the locals and many people write with authority and say that ford was the junction of two Roman roads.
Yeah,
and one of the Roman roads, you can actually trace it on the Olden Survey map as far as Lower Pertwood Farm, because it goes from Salisbury through Groverley Wood, through the Great Ridge Wood, and stops around Pertwood. So you can't really trace it much further than that, but it's in the direction of Kingston. And there's another Roman road that would have gone up from Poole past Badbury Rings, and that one stops just next to Shaftesbury and kind of loses its way. But there's a theory that would have gone all the way over to Bath. But the one that goes through the Great Ridge from Salisbury, as far as I can make out, that was known as the Lead Road, and is one of the very few commerce tracks linked back to the Romans. So the theory is that these two roads converge at that ford. So these ancient trackways have been there for hundreds and, well, thousands of years. It can't quite prove it, but it's probable that would have been the case.
Yeah. And the King Alfred connection is that, and as we talked about on the last podcast and the Battle of Ethandun at Eddington, that Alfred took his troops from Athelney, which is on the Somerset Levels, where they were, they'd been sort of, you know, they'd retreated to Athelney and stayed there for, I think, some years, if I remember rightly. And as the Danes sort of moved across, you know, west across southern England, Alfred decided to, you know, that they needed to be sort of defeated in battle. And he led his troops from Athelney. And it's thought that so Alfred had one army of troops, and through various sort of alliances, there were two other sort of armies that agreed to join him in battle against the Danes. And these three armies came together at some point. And there's been a lot of debate and a lot of research about where they actually met up, where they came together. And I mean, you can sort of Google this, and there's some very good videos about this on YouTube, but I think the strongest candidate seems to be that they met around this ford, because it was the junction of two Roman roads, and they met at, and there's reference to Egbert's Stone, which was sort of the meeting place. And Egbert was, I think, Alfred's grandfather. And there's some suggestion that the stones came from Court Hill, which is just to the west of Kingston Deverell. And there's what seems to be a slightly fanciful idea that the word court is because I guess it was Egbert, but held court up there. Well, I doubt it was all those years ago. It was the same. Court meant the same thing, or is even spelt the same. But there's a suggestion that the stones were brought down from Court Hill. In fact, there are three stones just next to the church in Kingston. There's a private garden, and what are supposedly Egbert's stones, three stones, are in this garden. And they're sort of built like a sort of dolmen, like an entrance to an old burial mound. And they're in this guy's garden. And apparently you can just about make them out from sort of public land. But those stones were supposedly where Alfred assembled his troops. And having done that and addressed them, they then moved on to what was called, or what's referenced in the Saxon Chronicles, to the Eily Oak, which was sort of partway between the ford and the final battle place at Effenden. And again, there's been a lot of research around where Eily Oak is, and one of the theories is that it's at Southley Woods and around Robin Hood Bower, which we've mentioned before in the podcast, and we'll do so again. But the first meeting place where all the three armies assembled is supposedly, and I think the favourite location is at the ford at what is now Kingston Deverell.
Yeah, and I think it's fair to say as well that we can't be 100% sure on that. I know there are a lot of different theories about where the Egbert stone actually was, but I think it's quite nice to think that, you know, and if you look at the map, it makes sense that it would be in the Kingston Deverell area. I mean, you can see where they would have marched from Somerset. You know, they would have followed the Harrow Way, or the Hard Way, as it's also known, which partly is the route of the A303. But if you go west of King Alfred's Tower near Stourhead, you've got a village called Hardway, which is really where that old Harrow Way would have come through. So it would have come through. It would have gone through the woods around Stourhead, past the current King Alfred's Tower. I wonder why it's called King Alfred's Tower. And then it carried on through Kilmington Common, across Whitesheet Hill, and it goes towards down towards the A303. And just west of Willoughby Hedge services on the A303, you've got a junction where that ancient trackway of the Harrow Way joins with the Roman road that goes north up towards Kingston Deverell. So you can just imagine them doing that, going north up to Kingston Deverell, and then following the Wyly Valley, following the river, yeah, all the way up towards Warminster. And just right of the river up there is Southley Wood, which makes sense to be a camping point, where they can have their rest before they march on to Eddington the next day. So when you look at the map, it all makes sense. Mm. It looks plausible.
Yeah. And I think the Saxon Chronicles apparently give sort of various clues, but of course it's the landscape and people's knowledge of the landscape would have been very different those days, and historians sort of look at that and sort of analyze what it means and look at the indicators as to where various locations are. So it's as you've just said, I mean, it's not, it can never be 100% certain, but people who are far more knowledgeable than us have sort of drawn those conclusions that the ford and then Southley Woods are the two most likely locations, before then going on to the most likely location for the battle at Effenden, what is now Eddington, Bratton, around that area. Something I found out yesterday, or the day before, was that just on the edge of Southley Woods. So there's a road that goes from the A350 to Sutton Veney. Plug for Plain Ales, because their brewery's on that road. and it's fantastic beer, by the way. But just before you get into Sutton Veney, and I saw a picture of it, there's a metal 5-bar gate, and apparently just beyond the gate into the field, and you can't see it from the road, and again it's private land, there's a henge there just on the edge of Southley Woods, which I'd no idea, and I've never seen a picture of it, so presumably nobody's been into that field to look. But
yeah, I've looked into that. I haven't actually been there, but I've tried to look at it on aerial Google views and things, and from the roadside, and I don't think at ground level you can see very much.
No,
it's one of those things that it's more like a marking these days, but there was definitely a henge there. Mm. And when you think you've got that, and you've got Robin Hood's Bower, which is an ancient earthwork in itself, it's a kind of enclosure with a ditch. You know, there's again so much going on in this landscape in ancient history. It's fascinating.
Should we crack on with the walk then?
Let's go on. Let's carry on. Yeah.
So from the ford. And when I wrote my blog about the walk I did, there's a bit of a funny story there about a white van man who I watched him get stuck in that ford. But moving on from that, I sort of crossed the road, the 3095, and again you'll see this on the map. And I sort of headed up through a lovely little wood. You sort of head sort of south and then sort of southwest, and you sort of climb up through this wood, and as you climb up there's some great views across to Little Knoll and Long Knoll over towards Stourhead from up there, and you eventually come out to sort of open downland. And I then sort of headed out towards sort of just to the east of what's marked as King's Hill on the map. And so you're going sort of over the top of the brow of the hill and then descending into one of Wiltshire's bottoms, fantastic views, particularly across to sort of southwest, where you're looking across to the, I mean, you can barely see it. You're looking over to the A303 and towards just beyond sort of Willoughby Hedge, you know, the surfaces. You can't see it. I mean, occasionally you see a lorry up there, but it feels so remote, and you feel like you're just, you know, a long way from anywhere. So you come over this, the brow of the hill, and start to drop down into this coombe, into this bottom. And you've got some great field systems there. And I was astonished the number of red kites and buzzards that I saw up there. And that was certainly the day I did the walk. And like you, it was a really hot day. You know, all you could hear was the buzzards and the red kites calling. And I sat for ages sort of just taking all that in. It was just beautiful. And you sort of, as you come over that hill and down into to the bottom, if you look over to what would be, I mean, basically you look to your left and you can see in the distance some strip lynchets, which we quite often talk about, and little sort of terraces, sort of about 12, 18 inches wide, that they're sort of little level pieces of land that they cut into the hillside so that they could farm these little strips. And there's a really fantastic sort of well-preserved set of strip lynchets off to your left, which would be the sort of northeast from where you're looking. And basically that's where the walk heads. You're going to head over towards those strip lynchets, so you'll walk right past them. Now, there is a bridle way there. There's also a bridle way off to the southwest, which crosses sort of open access land, where you could go and look at the sort of field systems that are marked on the map there. So you'd be heading towards the sort of A303, that direction. But, you know, that's not where we went. We went the other direction, up towards the strip lynchets. And basically you're heading towards Monkton, and Monkton Deverell at that point.
Yeah. It's interesting because when you say that, because that was one thing I felt when I was up there in late May, is you felt you were really remote. It was very remote. There was no traffic noise. No. Even though the A303 is over the brow of the hill, it's shielded. The sound of it doesn't seem to carry.
Yeah.
So it does feel really wild, really remote, and just the views are just stunning, absolutely stunning. Yeah. And I can remember when I walked along those Strimp Lynchets, I sort of clambered up them and started to walk along them just to get a sense of them. But it really was a fine example of these ancient medieval farming systems.
Yeah.
You know, it hadn't been damaged by ploughs. It was still in existence and it was still very visible. So it's just going up there to see those in their own right is a good thing to do. But yeah, loads of wildlife, very wild. Great place to just get out there on your own and just sit and contemplate the universe, really. Fantastic place.
I wrote the blog, which is, I think it was from memory, it was sort of May, was it May last year? Was it 19? I'm losing track of years.
No, it was May last year, yeah.
Yeah. I remember sort of before I turned left, heading along the bottom of that valley towards the Strip Lynchets. So I remember watching this guy in his tractor sort of ploughing the field in front of me over to what would be the southeast. And, you know, you get all the seagulls following the ploughs. And the hillside was so steep. And it reminds me of when I was much younger and used to live in Sussex. And sort of their farms are quite marginal land, and I thought, why on earth is he bothering with that piece of land? It's so steep. I mean, the tractor, you'd think it would almost tip over. It was coming along the side of this, you know, following the contours around, and you could almost imagine that just the other side was the, you know, the sea was the south coast. So, sadly, it's the A303 the other side.
Yeah.
oh no, it's the A350. I think the
A350. Yeah. Sorry.
But I think I said on my blog, I mean, you know, you can see why you do it just for the hell of it, because you can, because it's so beautiful. But just talking about Monkton just there, which we're going to sort of head towards in this walk. I was reading about just the sort of the Deverell villages and the three principal ones in this area around the walk. So you've got Kingston Deverell, and then heading east along the valley, Monkton Deverell, where we're coming to now, and then after that is Brixton Deverell, which we're going to cover in the second of the two podcasts about the Deverells. And years ago, I mean, at the time of the Doomsday Survey, Kingston Deverell was actually the sort of the minor of the villages along there, so it was quite a small settlement, and Monkton Deverell was much bigger. And again, I don't know, I'm sort of looking at the map now. There seems to be quite a few houses in Monkton Deverell, but I've always thought of that as being like Kingston Deverell's younger brother, or smaller brother, rather. And it's probably grossly unfair, and people, if anybody listens from there, they'll probably be up in arms. But I've always thought of it that way. And I think part of it is because I've never actually stopped in Monkton Deverell. Cycled through it many times on my way over up the Hindon Road and over Penn Hill, but never actually stopped. And it's very difficult to find anywhere to stop there in a car where you can stop safely. And that's probably why, you know, in my head, it doesn't seem as significant as Kingston Deverell. But I'm sure it's a place to sort of stop and explore. There's certainly a church there, that's for sure.
Yeah, for me, Monkton Deverell, again, it's not a place I've ever stopped. So you pass through because it's on the road. But actually, looking at the map, it's set back from the road. There are quite a few houses and side roads and things. So it's maybe we owe that to ourselves to just take a bit of time out one day and go and spend some time in the village.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I normally find when I sort of go to these places that the church is the place to head, because you can normally sort of tuck a car in at the side of the road somewhere. But otherwise, I mean, just park up by the phone box in Kingston Deverell and walk. It's not very far.
Indeed.
So having sort of walked past the Strip Lynchets, when we did this walk, you get to some barns of, I think there were cattle sheds, if I remember rightly, at what is called Monkton on the OS map. So you've got Monkton and then Monkton Deverell. And it's very clear you've got a sort of gate off to your right. There's a pedestrian gate and also a bigger gate for horses to get through. And it goes through a wood, very pretty little wood. And then that's where you join up with the the Hindon Road that goes over Penn Hill and heads off to the A350, and basically you from there you walk along that road for a couple of hundred yards, and then you sort of head up, heading sort of northeast up across the fields, and basically you're heading towards Summerslade Down. And again, if you look at an OS map, that's very clearly marked. And that is Summerslade Down is owned by what used to be called Lower Pertwood Farm. I think it's now called just Pertwood Organics or Pertwood Organic Farm. That's a very interesting place. And apart from anything else, another plug, we're going to get sponsored by those people. We've got to, haven't we? Pertwood Organics. They've got a farm shop off the A350, which I've never actually been in, but apparently they do sort of organic breakfast cereals, and they're quite well known, but I've never seen them. But I only found that out when I was looking at their website the other day.
I don't think I've been there, but I've noticed Pertwood Organics because driving down the A350, on my many trips to Bournemouth when the world was normal, because my son lives down there, by the side of the A350, Pertwood Farm fields adjoin the road. And what they would do is at the edge of the fields, they would plant up wildflower strips.
Oh, right.
So you get this wonderful profusion of colour. And on one of the fields a couple of years ago, they planted a whole load of sunflowers. And you know what sunflowers are like for people travelling through.
Yeah, every
stop. They become a magnet. Yeah. But actually, there's not many places to stop and look. But it was just one of those pleasant things. You'd see these bright yellow sunflowers by the side of the road, and I'd see these signs for Pertwood Organic. So that's how it got cemented in my mind over the last few years.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, just sort of sticking over that part. I mean, it's not part of the walk, but it's sort of bounded by the area we're talking about, sort of the A50, A303. I mean, Pertwood as a sort of parish, and sort of, you know, a manor, you know, he's long established, and it's kind of sort of split into two now, and you've got Lower Pertwood to the west of the A350, and then you've got Higher Pertwood to the east, and I think now, you know, we've got Pertwood Organics and the farm, which in what was, you know, what is called Lower Pertwood on the map, and the other side of the road at Higher Pertwood, that's called Pertwood Manor Farm. So I think we're going to sort of leave that out to today's podcast. But Pertwood Manor Farm is again, it's a place I thought, how on earth do you get there? Because it's a little hamlet, very beautiful old sort of manor house. With
it's for sale recently, you know.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I had a quick look. 12 million quid.
I couldn't quite spare the cash, but yeah, no, whole hamlet was for sale. If you bought, you owned the hamlet,
yeah,
including the church and the farm and everything.
Yeah, and a lot of land. But yeah, I couldn't quite figure out how you sort of actually get to that, because again, as you were saying, there's not really anywhere to stop on the A350, and I'm not sure they would appreciate you driving down that drive to his manor house to go and look at the church. But anyway, we're going to, you know, we'll leave that to one side, and we're going to look at Lower Pertwood. And again, you look at the map up there, and straight off the A350, there's a Roman road. And I think I read somewhere that there's a junction of something like seven, you know, ancient trackways up at that point. So this whole area, and again, I'm just scrolling across the map, you know, earthworks, tumulus, field systems, they're just marked everywhere around there. I mean, this whole landscape has, you know, it's been farmed continuously since at least 3,500 BC. You know, so 5,500 years people have been farming up here.
Yeah, and up on Summerslade Down, of course, there's a long barrow marked on the map as well, which indicates that this was an important site for somebody at some point. And that's what really, for me, brings it home, is when you're up there and you feel this remoteness and quietness and the lack of people today, that wasn't always the case. This was an actively managed landscape for thousands of years.
Yeah. Well, let's sort of move on up to Summerslade Down then, which, as we said, is a very interesting place for all sorts of reasons. So again, as you sort of head across the down, and there's plenty of sort of public rights of way, but there's also a couple of open access areas, and the long barrow that you just mentioned is sort of on the southwest corner of a wood. And the Long Barrow, which I didn't realise when I was walking up there, it's only afterwards when I looked at the map, that the Long Barrow is actually in one of the open access areas. So you can wander out there. And there's, you know, you don't need to go onto private land anywhere. You can come straight off the bridle way that cuts across to the just to the southern edge of Southern Slade Down and straight into the open access area and to the Long Barrow. Pertwood Organics or Pertwood Farm is an interesting place. It's owned by a South African guy, a company, and he has farms or a farm still in South Africa. But I know he's put a lot of money into it was already organic. It's been organic since I think the 1990s. But when I did the walk, I bumped into a guy who was a farm worker up there. He was just doing some maintenance, and we got talking. We chatted for about an hour. Chap called Chris Gregory, who sadly no longer works at the farm, but he was just a mine of information about the place. And he said that the current owners of Pertwood Organics have put a lot of money in sort of making this or I think sort of bringing it up to scratch. I got the sense that the previous owners it maybe hadn't had quite as much money to invest in the place. And it had become sort of slightly run down, if that's not too unfair. And the new owners have done made an awful lot of investment in it. So along the side of one of the tracks I was looking at, as I was walking up there, I was looking at this sort of field boundary, and there was a load of sort of area that had just been left sort of rough, and it was filled with Charnock mustard, the sort of bright yellow flowers. And that's when I bumped into to Chris Gregory, and we got talking, and it was, as I suspected it was a patch that they'd sort of left for to attract lapwing and stone curlew. And there was a barn there where the last time I walked it, I sort of went in to have a sort of poke around this little open barn, because I could see a couple of owl boxes up in the roof and, you know, owl pellets all over the floor. So, you know, this, again, to about wildlife, it's one of those places where, because of its remoteness and there's not that many people go up there, if you're a bird spotter, you know, what a great place to spend a day. But as I got talking to Chris and talking about that wood next to the Long Barrow, the open access area, and I didn't go up there at the time because, as I said, I didn't know it was open access. Apparently it used to be a commune in the wood, and again I'm looking at the map now, and I don't think the wood is open access. It doesn't, so you know, I'm not suggesting you go poking around that wood, because that is private. And in fact, I think there's a sensitivity about the land up there, because the last time I walked it, which was just before we were locked down again, I was doing the walk from the other direction. So I'd come up from Brixton Deverell, and I'd sort of gone into a field, and I'll tell you why in a little bit, and just to have a look at something. And it was near, there's a reservoir marked on the map. So I just sort of walked 100 yards across this field, went to look at what I wanted to look at, came back, and this Land Rover came up behind me up the a farm track, ever such a nice bloke, another South African guy. And I was wearing my Natural England volunteer cagoule at the time, so he thought I was up there doing some sort of survey, because they work very closely with Natural England, and I think they take advice from Natural England as to how to sort of, you know, maintain the land and make it more biodiverse. So he thought I was up there on sort of official business, and then he saw my tripod, you know, my camera, and he said, "Oh, yeah, taking photographs, are we?" Yeah, that's what the tripod's for. And I realizing obviously that he was South African, I said, "Oh, are you the owner then?" And he said, no. And he said, he's just called me up here. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. And I said, oh, so what do you do there? And he gave me his business card, and it's, I can't remember his name now, David something. And it's a director of security. And I think I said to you, Glyn, at the time, you know, why would an organic farm have a director of security?
And, that's very James Bond, doesn't it?
Yeah. And I, you know, my imagination was running riot, and I was thinking, they must have cameras up here. And I could imagine his boss sitting there in his big black leather armchair with his white pussycat on his lap, monitoring all these CCTV cameras, and he'd soon be poking around in this field near the reservoir.
Yeah. So there's some bloke with a camera up there.
Yeah, get up there, Dave. But he was ever such a nice bloke, and he asked me to send him some photographs that they could use on the website. Which, when I pointed out that I didn't work for free, and he might have to pay for some photographs, he became less interested at that point. But he did direct me to, well, I'll let you talk about this, because I think you went to see them before I did. I knew they were there, but I didn't go and look at them. Then you went up to look.
Yes.
The stone circles.
The stone circles, the mysterious stone circles on Somerslade Down, which aren't actually on the map. So they're quite a mystery. But yes, when I went up there, I had been primed by you that they were up there. Certainly the big one. I didn't find the small one because there were two. But yeah. I had a wander over to the larger stone circle to just inspect it and take some photographs. And it's quite a mysterious thing, because the stones are ancient themselves, and the circle looks very authentic, and it looks like any other ancient stone circle that you would see up and down the length of the British Isles. So the fact it wasn't on the map was a real mystery to me, and I took some snaps of it and put them up on social media, and it generated a lot of interest from my archaeological followers and historical followers going, where the hell is that?
Yeah,
you know, it was like, this is as if we discovered this stone circle that had been forgotten. But actually, the real story is a bit more mundane, isn't it, Paul?
Yeah, I think you caused mayhem with that tweet, didn't you?
Yeah. It prompted a few people to go up there. So other people who are quite well known on social media, the folks from Weird Walk, they do a regular magazine and have a fantastic social media presence. They asked for directions, and I sent them up there, and they took photos and sent me through some free copies of the magazine
in
exchange, which I thought was pretty good. And the ancient stone bothering guy from Facebook, he went up there for a look as well.
Yeah. Well, look, a bit of a word of caution, because again, if you look at the map, where the stone circle is not open access. I mean, that is private land. And that's why when Dave, the security man, was talking to me, that's why I said to him, look, do you mind? Because I'd come back to another visit to actually go and walk across to see the stone circle. Because the first time I went up there, in fact, Chris Gregory, the farm worker, had told me about them and had pointed them out to me. So I could see them from a distance. So I thought, well, I'll go back up there and take some photographs and get a bit closer. So I was quite glad that I bumped into Dave, because I could see it was not open access. And I don't like going on land that isn't open access, especially farmland, because it was a bit of a diversion. But I was chatting to our local farmer here the other day, who was getting quite – He's a lovely bloke, very, very quietly spoken, very gentle guy, but he got quite wound up about people wandering across fields of grass on his farm. And people think, well, it's just grass, and they go and walk the dogs there. But he said, good grass seed, it's there for a reason. It's for grazing the sheep and what have you. He said, and it costs as much as barley or wheat. And he said, that's an expensive crop. So if you see a field of grass and you're wandering across it, you know, that potentially is costing me, the farmer, quite a lot of money. Which is why, you know, even if it just looks like grass, I don't walk on it unless it's open access.
So yeah, that's a fair point. I think the issue I found with Somerslade Down is that the field itself that we're referring to with the stone circle in, it does have a right of way.
Yes.
That tracks right through it.
It does.
And it's one of those ancient rights of way, which actually is not, it's not like a path.
No.
It's just a right of way that goes through the field. So it's very easy to diverge off it, because it's not a marked path, it's just
but the stones are probably a couple of hundred meters away from where the right of way is signified or shown across the map. But I said to Dave the security man or David, I said, do you mind if I go over to the stones and take some photographs? And he said, no, go ahead, you know, no problem at all. So I don't think they mind, but I think, you know, it out of courtesy, you know, it's probably advisable to ask.
Yeah, and I think it's fair to point out that it's quite clear they've got a director of security, they've got cameras up there, they do monitor who's on the land, because, you know, looking into it after the event, they have had problems with vandalism and theft of farm vehicles and everything. So they take the security quite seriously. So just be respectful. I think with most of these places, if you're respectful of the land, you won't get into trouble.
Yeah, absolutely. But having said that, completely almost contradictory, but coming back up much further, the Somerset Laid Down was the site for, and let's see, 6 years was the site of festivals, different festivals. So there was something called the Big Green Gathering, which is still going. It's now called the Green Gathering. So it's very much a sort of, you know, as the name suggests, sort of people who, you know, into ecology and sort of being green. They had, it was a location for the festival up there, 1995, 96, 97, 98, and 2000. So the only year there wasn't a festival up there was 1999. And then in 1993, there was something called the Tribal Gathering Festival, which is one of these, basically it's a rave. So, you know, in the past, there have been an awful lot of people up in that area. Because I wondered if the stone circles were something to do with that. But apparently, I couldn't find anything definitive as to when the stone circles were made. But there was a suggestion somewhere from the 1970s, so pre these festivals.
Yeah, I've heard someone else say that they were put up for the festival in the 1990s. But again, I can't find any definitive thing that says, you know, what's the origin of them. That they could have easily been incorporated into the festival as a feature if they're already there.
Yeah, but you can imagine it.
But it's quite clear they're not ancient. They're not designated ancient monuments. They're a modern thing, but fascinating to see. And they have a fantastic viewpoint across to the other side of the valley as well. So,
oh, yeah, you look across to, I mean, the photographs that I took, and I think I put them on the Facebook group. I don't know what I did. I messed something up with the camera, which I really shouldn't be doing after all these years. But so I'd mucked up the focus. But there was a great view sort of across the stones over towards, again, Little Knoll and Long Knoll over towards Stourhead and beyond. I mean, as you say, the views up there are just forever. The smaller stone circle is very small. And is sort of more towards the sort of where the reservoir is, that sort of direction. But you don't need to go in the field to see it. I mean, to be honest, there's no point. You know, it just looks like somebody's dumped a few stones, but they have been fashioned into a circle, and you can see them from the byway. So you don't need to go into the field to see them.
Yeah, yeah.
But from that. From the field where the big stone circle is, as you said, there is a right of way across it. There's a bridle way that cuts across it, and from the from the bridle way, which runs sort of west east, you turn off and head north. There's kind of a junction, and there's basically, as you look north, you can see what looks like a bush in the distance. And it's actually the top of a beech tree, quite a tall beech tree, but because it's just over the brow of the hill, it just looks like a bush. And when I was chatting to this guy, Chris Gregory, he said, basically, you know, head towards that what looks like a bush, and it's a clump of beech trees. Chris explained that there was a farm worker that had worked on the Purwood Farm for decades. And when he died, and that was like, you know, his favourite place was this beech clump. And apparently his ashes were spread under the, you know, the there's one really, you know, bigger beech tree, and his ashes was spread there. And when you go there, because you go right past the beech clump, I mean, God, what a place to spend eternity. I mean, again, the views opening up all around from that vantage point are just spectacular.
I must say, actually, I looked on the website yesterday in preparation for this at the article you wrote on the blog post you wrote about this, and you took a photograph. It's a black and white photograph from that beech clump where the sheep were sheltering in the shade, and it looked across the valley to the other side, and it's an absolutely stunning photograph and a stunning view. I mean, I'd urge you, go and have a look at it, because you just get then a sense of what that landscape is like. It's just dreamlike.
Yeah, so you're looking across to Colkitchen Hill, where we're going the next episode, and Brimsdown, that's right. So that's the other side of the valley, but as you say, the views are just go on forever. And I think I said in that blog, because it was a blisteringly hot day, and the sheep were, as you say, were taking shade under the trees, it looks like it could have been a Greek island, because the ground was quite barren because it was so hot and dry. And then these sort of sheep, they could have been goats, you know, sort of under a tree, and they're looking out across this landscape, which is why I shot it in black and white. It just cried out to be black and white, that one. But the beech clump itself, from afar, is very photogenic. I mean, clearly from Somerset Slade down, where we were just talking about, you can't really see it from there because you can just see the top of that, the largest tree.
But I must admit, since I've found that beech clump, it's one of those things which, again, becomes an anchor in the landscape for me in terms of getting my bearings. I've seen it from the A350. Recently on New Year's Eve, I did a walk in the hills above Sutton Veney over Littlecombe Hill and Littlecombe Bottom.
Yeah,
and you could see it from there.
Yeah.
It's one of these little things that stitches together the landscape in your mind as you're wandering around Wiltshire. Yeah. You find these little places that stand out.
Yeah, obviously as photographers, beech clumps are they're classic Wiltshire, aren't they? And the way they just, you know, they sit on their own in the landscape. Photographers love lone trees. We travel miles looking for lone trees in the landscape, particularly when they're sort of on top of a hill and we've got this, epic skies behind it. And this is one of those beech clumps. From the south, you just can't see it. But go to the other side, from Brixton Deverell, there it is. It just dominates the skyline as you come up from Brixton Deverell. I took hundreds of photographs after I came up there, which is unlike me. Normally, I'll sort of set the tripod up, put a camera on, and click, and I'll do one or two photographs. I suppose from the days when I used to shoot more film and to be a bit more economical, digital, you can just rat them off. But this one occasion, you just think, oh wow, I'll just walk up that path a few more feet and different out, get a bit lower, get a bit higher, Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah, you just can't stop. But you kind of, once you pass the beech clump, you start to sort of drop down. Again, as you said, the path isn't clear. They are, as I tell people because we've got a right of way in our garden, and I tell people it's a right of way over land. It doesn't need to be a clearly defined path. It's purely, a right you have a right to cross my land at around this point. And that's here you can't see a clearly defined path, which again, it probably indicates how few people walk up there. Otherwise, they'd have worn the path in the landscape.
Yeah, very true. Very true.
But as you drop down towards Brixton Deverell, it does become more clearly defined. And I think you can see that people ride horses up there. So that has sort of, worn a bit more of a track down towards the village. That's sort of pretty much sort of brings us to the end of this part of the walk, as you're delivered into the village of Brixton Deverell. The next episode, where we sort of continue through Brixton Deverell and to the north and the west of the B Road through the valley, continues on. And Brixton Deverell in itself is a fascinating place, and has got some really quite exciting history to it.
Absolutely, I'm looking forward to that. And it was exactly the right idea to split this particular topic across two podcasts, because we're timing out on this one now.
Yeah, we've done getting on for, well, once we've edited down, but I mean, the clock's ticking at 54 minutes. So, there's no way we'd have covered both parts in one
episode. No. So in 2 weeks' time, we'll come back and we'll continue this walk on the north side of the Deverils. But until then, I guess we say goodbye. But before we do, as usual, a quick credit to your colleague and friend, Steve.
Yep, Steve Dixon. Thanks again for the music. And he's busily composing for the next episode as well. He's got something up his sleeve for us there. So I haven't heard it yet either. So I'm really excited about that.
Okay, that's great. All right, so that's it for another podcast from Hidden Wiltshire. And we will be back in 2 weeks' time. Thank you.
Bye for now.